This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So last week we had a really, really fascinating couple of shows. Of course, we featured Philip Mantle, not on the regular episode of the Paracast, but on the supplementary show after the Paracast. And that's where we have William Puckett every week with the newest sightings. And Philip was telling us how he got into the publishing business. I don't think he regrets it, but he's got a lot of interesting books, and we've had a lot of fascinating guests as a result. And twice now we've had Calvin Parker. And, of course, Calvin was involved in that Pascagoula sighting with Charles Hickson back in 1973. As far as Philip is concerned, if you want to hear that episode, it's only available to subscribers of Paracast Plus, our premium service. So for more information, go to plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com, and learn how to subscribe and hear all of these extra shows. We also give you a version of this show free of the network ads. Want to mention that. In any case, we also have Kevin D. Randall joining us for about the 27th time now. He's one of our favorite regular guests. I haven't added up how many times he's been here. It wasn't yesterday, right, Kevin?
It was not yesterday.
Okay. We're in agreement then. Anyway, I wanted to get back to Calvin Parker, and I know Kevin's going to have something to say about this. Now, Calvin mentioned being hypnotized several times, first not long after the case. Was it three times, Randall, or four times? I've lost track. It was right after the case in the first couple of years, then in 1993 by Bud Hopkins.
A really early one that happened fairly soon after the incident, according to one of our forum posters. So then, and then we had Hopkins, and then the latest one was Kathleen Martin.
Yeah, Kathleen was back in September. Now, of course, the big question we ask, and Kevin Randall understands why I'm asking it, is to what extent is it possible that his memories of those cases were somehow corrupted by those hypnotic sessions? Now, obviously, without having analyzed the person directly, what's your perception, Kevin Randall? Do you think as his memories expand to include an additional abduction, maybe Calvin Parker had suffered from having his memories corrupted somehow?
If you look at the way Bud Hopkins conducted his hypnotic regression sessions, you can see that he manipulated the data, I guess. I don't think Bud was aware of what he was doing, but under hypnotic regression, it is very simple to lead the subject to a place he or she doesn't want to go. Bud Hopkins had challenged people one time a number of years ago to show a place where he had led the witness during his hypnotic regression sessions. And I said, sure, challenge accepted, and went through his books and saw the way that he was subtly doing this. I don't think he realized what was going on. And one of the things they did was you get a subject and they reach a point and they say, I do not remember anymore. And the hypnotist, the operator, says repeatedly, you can see more. Let's pretend you're on an elevator. Let's pretend you're looking over a wall. Let's pretend we're doing this or another thing. You can get more. You can get more. And this is telling the subject that the operator wants more information. So he is, and in this case, Bud Hopkins, is coaching the witness on coming up with more information, and it often happens. In one of the Hopkins transcripts, and it's in his books, the subject says, I do not remember anymore. And Hopkins says, well, yes, you can. You can remember more. And you can see the subtle manipulation going on there. So, yeah, it's very simple to corrupt the memories. When I've been involved in this sort of thing, the hypnotic regression, and it was in a book that I'd done called Conversations, which I think is a wonderful little book, and nobody ever reads the darn thing. But it deals with a woman who believed she had been abducted, and it turned out she was talking about a past life, it turned into a past life regression. And the hypnotist that I was using and I were very, very careful on how we asked the questions, because a question can imply its own answer, a leading question. We were trying to avoid that at all costs. The other thing we did, I would never speak during the sessions. If I had a question I wanted asked, I would write it out and hand it to the hypnotist, and he would ask the questions of the subject. But it's very simple to manipulate the data. Dr. Harder, who worked for APRO as their director of research and did a lot of hypnotic regression, and I was working with him on the Pat Roach case in Utah. At the time, I was very young and naive, and he says, well, people can't lie under hypnosis and blah, blah, blah. And it turns out, well, that's simply untrue. They can make up everything under hypnosis if they want to, if the operator's leading them in the directions. And what I noticed later on was that he was careful in the hypnotic regression sessions, although some of his questions were quite leading. But between sessions, and we had a number of sessions with Pat Roach, and he would discuss other abduction cases with her. And one of the things I remember is him talking about Betty Hill. Harder at the time was trying to validate the Hill case by finding additional witnesses to similar types of abduction who wouldn't have been primed by the Hill case. And yet that's exactly what he was doing. And he was talking about how Betty Hill had believed that she had been examined by the alien creatures, and that she thought there were lots of little Betty Hills running around out there. I think that was a quote from her, you know, a lot of little Betty Hills running around out there. And in the very next session, into hypnotic regression, Pat says, I do not remember being examined, but I know I was. And so Harder had subtly implanted that idea with her between sessions. And it wasn't like we were doing, you know, here's a session, we'll take an hour off, here's a session. This in whole thing transpired over several days. So it wasn't that we were kind of running her ragged or anything like that. So it was kind of left to her schedule and how she wanted to run it. But I noticed Harder, and I did notice it at the time, but I realized later that that was what Harder was doing. So yes, if under hypnotic regression, it's very, very easy to corrupt the memories. But the other thing you have to remember is that oftentimes, you don't even need the hypnotic sessions to corrupt the memories. Calvin Parker was abducted in 1973, which is many, many years ago. Since that time, how many programs have been devoted to alien abduction? How many programs have been devoted to the Hicks and Parker abduction? How many books have discussed that? Me included in some of that writing of that. And if one of those writers or one of those documentaries or one of those programs gets something wrong, suddenly wrong, and Calvin sees that, he can incorporate that into its memory. I think Elizabeth Lofton, who did a lot of work on memory and how easy it was to implant memories and how easy it was to do it without realizing it, by showing a video, a movie of a traffic accident. And then she would ask specific questions like, did the green car run the stoplight? And the answer was, there was no green car and there was no stoplight. It was a stop sign and it was like a red car. But a number of the people would say, yes, the green car ran the stoplight. I remember the green car running the stoplight. So that memory was implanted subtly into the subject mind simply by asking that particular question. So that's the long form answer to, yes, his memory could have been corrupted, which does not mean it was corrupted.
Now, I do remember here the interview that Chris O'Brien and I did a few years back with Dr. David Jacobs, who used, I gather, the same methods as Bud Hopkins. And we asked him about leading questions, and he basically said, there are no leading questions. Now, we can all consider the possibilities here. Now, one thing I did notice in our interview with Calvin Parker, he's a smart guy, and he said that one thing he observed about Bud Hopkins was that he was asking leading questions, but that Kathleen Martin did not. That doesn't mean that something was or wasn't screwed up in his memory of events, but there are some things there that we had questions about. And we'll get into more of this in hypnotic regression and 1,000 other subjects. So this week we have Kevin D. Randall, author of many, many, many books that you want to check out. And he's got this site, A Different Perspective. And if you look up Kevin D. Randall, A Different Perspective, you don't have to remember the URL. It's easy enough to find. Kevin Randall, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, you're in.
The Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
The Hebo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on, so it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hebo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hebo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
It takes a lot of courage to face your own death, but I'm glad I finally did. See, I was putting off getting life insurance to protect my family, even though I knew it was important. Then my neighbor's husband died. I watched her struggle emotionally and financially. It really made me face reality. If my husband died, how would I pay the mortgage, the car payments, or keep up the life the kids and I had? I realized I needed to get us life insurance right away. So I called AIG Direct. In less than 5 minutes, I had a quote. I was shocked at how affordable it is. Just $14 a month for $250,000 of term life coverage. I feel so much better knowing my family has protection.
Call AIG Direct right now for a free no-obligation quote. The call takes less than 5 minutes, and you can save up to 70%. Call now, 1-800-613-2646. That's 1-800-613-2646. 1-800-613-2646.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Now, Kevin Randall, the one thing that concerned me, and it's related to something, of course, in our forums too, is where Calvin's talking about a second abduction, I think in 1993, where he tries to physically attack his main captor, but is prevented or stopped from doing so by this robotic creature. That sounded to me more like science fiction than something that really happened. And if he wasn't making it up, is this based on something that might have been corrupted in his memory from that 1993 hypnotic regression session from Bud Hopkins? Is that possible?
Well, it depends on what all that Calvin Parker's read about alien abduction. If you remember the Vias Boas case from Brazil in 1957, that was one of the things that he made a big deal about, is how he had tried to fight off his captors, and there were four of them, and they overwhelmed him. And I think I always thought that kind of played into the Hispanic or the South American idea of machismo. You know, I didn't just surrender with them easily. I tried to fight them off. And I noticed that in a couple of other abduction cases where the subject has suggested that they tried to resist as best they could, but they were overwhelmed by the numbers. So it's very possible that Parker, and I don't know this about him, how interested he was in researching, reading about the other alien abductions, how deeply he got into that phenomenon. If you remember, originally, his claim was during the 1973 abduction was that he had passed out and he didn't really remember much of what had gone on. And he told me that had been put out there as a way of directing attention away from him because he wasn't interested in it and Hickson was interested in it. So it kind of deflected all the questions to Hickson. When I talked to him, he suggested, you know, he was conscious and he remembered a lot more. And that's a question that I'll ask him when I get the opportunity is, did you read much about alien abductions or UFOs after this event took place? The one thing with, when I was talking to Mike Rogers about the Walton abduction, he mentioned that he and Travis Walton had a UFO sighting some years prior to the abduction, which I found interesting. A lot of us go out there looking for UFOs and we never see them. And some of these people seem to draw them magnetically to them. And I think part of that may be that they misidentify natural phenomenon, but other, it may be that there's some kind of an interest there. But I have noticed that many of the abductees, well, obviously they would be repeaters. They would see things. I think Pat Roach never had really seen UFOs, but she got interested in the abduction phenomenon after it had happened to her. And I got in touch, well, she got in touch with me. I would say I learned about her after I'd done a magazine article about an abduction that took place in South America, which turned out to be a hoax, by the way. But she was inspired by that article to write to me at Care of the Magazine. And then I organized a trip out to interview. I called Cora Lorenzen and said, you know, I need somebody who's versed in hypnosis. And Harder came out to help with that sort of thing. But I think, as I said before, part of it was Harder contaminating the witness, but part of it was she had read other accounts of abduction and decided or brought some of these things into her abduction account as well. It's very easy for the mind to incorporate things into it that they've heard, and given the circumstances and the way things operate, that they believe that was something they observed or they participated in when they in fact did not.
With Calvin Parker, my impression of all this is that with the original episode in 1973, we didn't have all that many UFO sightings until 73 when we started getting a lot more after kind of a lapse, or at least a lapse of reported sightings, that the original case was probably pure, whatever caused it. But all bets are off after that, because obviously I think we should have probed that more, but there was so much information to get to with Calvin, we didn't go into the details that you mentioned, that how much had he read about UFO sightings and abductions after that?
You have to remember, of course, the big flap in 1973 started probably 3 or 4 weeks prior to the Hickson Parker abduction, and it carried on into November, and there was a lot of newspaper articles about it. But you have to also remember that in the late 1960s, you know, 3 or 4 years earlier, there was a great deal about UFOs in the media. The Lonnie Zamar case from 1964, for example, got national play, and then the regional newspapers, regional news organizations, of course, played up the local angle as well. So there's an opportunity for him to, of course, been aware of what was going on in the world of UFOs at the time. Abduction wasn't talked about that much, although what's-his-face's book, The Interrupted Journey, about the Hill case, was published in the mid-1960s. So information about the abduction phenomenon, Fuller, John Fuller's book, information about the abduction phenomenon was out there for somebody who was interested in UFOs. So I don't know what kind of interest did he have prior to this. I did an investigation with a guy named Carol Wayne Watts, I think it was, in Texas in 1968. And he made quite the local news. I don't know how widespread it was. If I knew about it when it was happening in 1968, it probably got a lot of play because I was in helicopter flight school at the time and we didn't have a lot of opportunity to watch TV or listen to the news. But I had an opportunity to go out and interview him. I got a 3-day pass, and what did I do on my 3-day pass? I went on a UFO investigation. I sat down with him and chatted with him about what was going on. His abduction clearly was invented, especially if you read the transcript at the time and the things that he talked about make no sense in today's world. I mean, he was talking about the alien creatures having all these paper maps laying around, and I'm thinking, yeah, Google Earth didn't exist back in 1968, so you weren't aware that you could map the stuff electronically and bring it up on a screen rather than have to have a paper map laying around, which had he said something like that would have been a wonderful way of saying, you know, that was a nice prediction he made. How did he come up with that? But the point simply is, I'd asked him, Watts, if he had seen any or if he read any UFO stuff, and he said, no, I didn't have anything then. And I gave him, I think it was a business card, and he went to put it in a drawer, and when he opened the drawer, I saw about 3 or 4 UFO books in there. So he clearly lied about his knowledge of UFOs, and later on he recanted the whole story. And then he recanted the recantation by saying, well, the CIA had laid him on his way to take a lie detector test and told him if he passed it, then there would be grave consequences for it. So he flunked it on purpose. But the point simply is the information is out there in the ether. And we don't know how much is picked up sort of through osmosis. And the best example I can think of this is there was a question on Jeopardy, I think it was, about what the business was on King of the Hill, the old animated series, King of the Hill. And I knew the answer had to do with propane, but I'd never watched the show. So the point simply was, I picked up through the osmosis somehow that the subject was propane. And you don't know how much of that might have influenced any of these witnesses as well, which would tend to contaminate the memory somewhat.
We've got a lot more to talk about with Kevin D. Randall, author of many books and the Different Perspective blog that I urge all of you to read. With Gene and Randall and Kevin, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live-underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug-out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement? You bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
At the Bellevue Voters Summit in Washington, President Trump tied his decision to pull troops from Syria to migrants trying to enter the U.S. at the southern border.
I don't think our soldiers should be there for the next 50 years guarding a border between Turkey and Syria when we can't guard our own borders at home. I don't think so.
France and Germany have halted exports of arms to Turkey that could be used in its offensive against the Kurds in Syria, and wants an immediate meeting of the U.S.-led coalition against the Islamic State. Turkey's actions are now facing international condemnation. Acting Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAleenan has resigned. He said he wanted to spend more time with his family. This is USA Radio News.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
800-871-3291. 800-871-3291. Again, that's 800-871-3291.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women. Here's Dr. Sonia Baccia on The Doctors.
So this is a product we're going to see if it works. It's called Instantly Ageless. And the idea is that it works very quickly, is you just need a very small amount. And then you apply it to areas where you might be a little bit puffy. I have just looked at what's in this product, and one of them is something called argireline, which is sort of a darling in dermatology right now. It's a peptide or a protein that actually relaxes the muscle. It's also called Botox in a bottle. The other active ingredient in this is silicates, which are almost act like a clay. They're minerals, and they're making the skin sort of tighter. It's actually increasing the surface tension on the skin to push that herniated fat pad back.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So, Kevin, in the scheme of things, of course, Calvin Parker was 19 when his abduction happened with his friend. That doesn't mean, as you say, he wasn't exposed earlier to UFO stories and such. But what you're pointing out here, too, is that there are probably very, very few pure abductions, maybe the Hills, but very, very few pure abductions because UFO cultural information has been out there for decades, movies, TV shows, etc. How can we have a pure abduction uninfluenced by anything else and somehow find out what really happened?
There was a really awful science fiction movie called Killers from Space.
Yes.
1954, Peter Graves as the scientist. Almost everything you see in the abduction phenomena is in that movie. From the unexplained scar on his chest, to the big-eyed aliens, to other aspects of the abduction phenomena. It's all laid out in this movie. How many people saw that? I remember seeing it as a kid, and it kind of creeped me out with the big eyes floating in the air, but that's something else. There was a 1908 science fiction film in which men from the moon, I guess, came down to Earth to abduct women for the obvious reason. So the idea of alien abduction has been out there literally for more than 100 years. And Betty Hill at one point, when Barney said something to her allegedly during the abduction phenomenon, said, "Have you been watching The Twilight Zone?" And so, you know, that becomes a point of, well, they're aware of The Twilight Zone. And there was a Twilight Zone episode called Hocus Pocus and Frisbee, starring Andy Devine, where he's abducted by aliens. And the face of the alien, when their human masks are broken, looks a little bit about like the illustration that Barney Hill had drawn. Others have said the Bolero shield from The Outer Limits was the source of the face of the aliens that Barney Hill had drawn. The point simply is the contamination is out there, and there's no way to eliminate it. You have to look at the person himself or herself and kind of evaluate the tale told from them. Pat Roach believed she had been abducted by aliens. Was she? I don't think so. I think what happened was she had an episode of sleep paralysis. I'm not saying that all abductions are explainable by sleep paralysis. I'm saying this one specific abduction, based on my interaction with the witness, with the abductee, and my interaction with Jim Harder about his investigation, as he did his investigation, I think the best explanation for that case is sleep paralysis. If you study sleep paralysis, you'll find that an awful lot of the elements of alien abduction are mirrored in sleep paralysis, including the belief there's an entity in the room with you. So you take a look at that, and I think that's what happened. She had an episode of sleep paralysis. She didn't understand it. It was something that we never talked about in 1973. I mean, people really didn't understand sleep paralysis in 1973. We've learned a lot more since then. But the whole point simply is this. She had this episode of sleep paralysis. She believed there was something in the room with her. And this is the first abduction case, by the way, when anybody reported the aliens coming into the house. And I did an article in Saga magazine about it, so I might be the first reporter or the researcher who reported the alien in the room coming into the house to abduct her. But I think she had that episode of sleep paralysis. She believed there had been an entity in the room. She saw this article in Saga magazine about alien abduction, and she put two and two together and believed she had been abducted by alien creatures. So there's that kind of thing you have to watch out for. You know, there are people that they say, well, the Hills weren't sleeping before they were abducted. Nobody is saying that sleep paralysis explains their abduction. I'm saying in the one case with Pat Roach, the abduction was caused, I believe, the belief in the abduction was caused by an episode of sleep paralysis.
And so, Kevin, I'd like to remind our listeners here that in addition to you being a retired USAF helicopter pilot, you also have a PhD in psychology. So your opinions here don't come from mere familiarity with ufology, but also from an academic background that goes at least as far back as 2001 here, from what I can see, when you published Invasion Washington about the Washington, D.C. case in 52. When did you first get your Ph.D.?
Well, we were working, and I say we, Bill Cohn, Russ Estes and I were working on a book called The Abduction Enigma. And we were looking at it, I guess, from a more skeptical point of view. And a lot of people were very angry about that book, and I can understand why, but what we were trying to do is tell the truth. And in the course of doing that, I thought it would be beneficial to understand more about psychology. Bill Cohn, of course, was a practicing psychologist, but I thought it would be beneficial to understand more about psychology. So that was why I was taking the classes in psychology. So I got the PhD in 2000, I believe it was.
Right. Okay. So that would have been just around the time that Invasion yes. Washington came out. And by yes. the way, I'm just looking at it on Amazon right now, and it's priced at $310
Canadian. Really?
Yeah.
Hey, I've got a bunch of copies, people. I'll sell them to you for
$200 So that's pretty amazing. Yeah.
I think it's because the book is out of print.
Yeah.
And so the people are thinking, well, we can make a whole bunch of money on this. We have a copy of the book, so we'll sell it for a lot of money. I was looking for another book the other day, and they wanted $55 for it. And I said, I'm not that interested in it.
Well, if people can order straight from you, I think I'm going to have to place one, because I'd like to get a hold of a copy for my own library. And people can also connect with you, too, on our community forums. We've got links directly to your site there, too. So when did you first become I just want to get some real basics down about you for people who might not be familiar with this. When did you first get involved in ufology?
I always blame my mother. She took me to see a movie when I was a little kid. She was really into science fiction, and she took me to see a movie, Earth versus the Flying Saucers. And, of course, that's about alien visitation and that sort of thing. And that sort of sparked the interest from that point.
Oh, that's
a classic.
I was
like a little kid. I was like 7 or 8 years old.
That was really good special effects for a flying saucer. That was done by Ray Harryhausen, the stop motion expert. And you probably know this, Kevin. The real subtle point about that is They actually bought one of Major Donald Kehoe's UFO books, I think, Flying Saucers from Outer Space, before they made this movie. I think because maybe they thought Kehoe owned the rights to use the word flying saucers. But maybe 30 seconds of the opening of the film about UFO sightings might have been roughly related to the book. But Kehoe, I think, was very embarrassed at what came out. But I think it, among the so-called B-movie sci-fi movies, remember in the 50s they weren't spending lots of money on sci-fi movies except for maybe Forbidden Planet. So I think of those, it was one of the better ones.
The flying saucers were crashing into all the iconic monuments in the United States at the end. It was absolutely wonderful.
And I think the big budget movie in that time frame was This Island Earth.
Oh, yes, right. I remember that one. It's not considered these days. We think, of course, Day the Earth Stood Still, which I don't think was a huge budget, although it had some pretty major actors in it.
Not to mention Robert Wise was the director, and you don't think of Robert Wise as a director of a science fiction film.
Except he also did Star Trek the Motion Picture.
And I think he did, no, that was George Pal, sorry. I'm just saying you don't think of him as a science fiction director, but that was a wonderful film. But the Mystery Science Theater 3000 had some fun with This Islander, so that makes it a much better film.
Well, Robert Wise, according to Tim Beckley, actually had an interest in UFOs and a belief in UFOs.
Yes.
And as I said, he did The Sound of Music also, and Star Trek the Motion Picture. What a
That's comparison. Quite a juxtaposition. Yeah.
I had Paul Davids on my program a couple of weeks ago, and he knew Robert Wise very, very well. And so he had gave some insight. Yeah, Robert Wise was very interested in UFOs.
Let's get into more of this in our next segment. Kevin D. Randall, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
With more people listening to radio than visit Google, Facebook, or YouTube, from the very young to the very old, everyone listens to radio. Pillow companies, alarm, identity theft, nutrition, insurance, banking, automotive, the list goes on and on. Billion-dollar businesses. Why? The answer is radio, the media everyone tunes into. Find out how effective and affordable radio can be for your business. Contact 877-996-4327 or advertise at gcnlive.com.
Hey folks, Tom D. for ParanormalDate.com.
Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, ghosts, zombies, UFOs, crop circles, and more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people who seek a little more than the other dating services offer. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and you want to connect with others, use the code George for a substantial discount. So many people want to share their experiences with the paranormal, the afterlife, the unusual, and this is the place to meet and share common interests with those of like minds. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. That's ParanormalDate.com. Use the code word George and start meeting others. Get going now and connect with someone you like.
Hey, Bugsy, you hear the news about Vinny?
Yeah, it's a real shame. He owed money to the IRS and they finally cut up with him.
Just like Al Capone.
If the IRS can get the Capone, imagine what they can do to little old Vinny, huh?
Poor cat, he was on top of the world. Bada boom, bada bing.
What Vinny needs now is an offer he can't refuse.
Hey, you got a tax problem? Does the IRS claim you owe them a bunch of dough? They can get you, too. So call the Tax Relief Line now and learn if you qualify to negotiate your $10,000-plus IRS tax debt for up to a 75% savings. Don't be like Al or Vinny and get busted. Make this free call now. Learn how you may be able to pay the IRS less.
Call now. 800-590-4930. 800-590-4930, 800-590-4930, that's 800-590-4930.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Long and short of it, let's just go back to where we started, Kevin. Do you think that Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker had a real experience? I'm not saying it wasn't changed or embellished or remembered badly. Do you think something real happened to them?
I believe so, yes. One of the keys to this is Parker and Hickson were at the police station or the sheriff's office and left alone in one of the rooms with a recorder running, and they didn't realize the recorder was running. That we now know is pretty much a standard police tactic. Leave them alone and see what they'll say, talking to one another, see if they'll give away the store. And they didn't suggest that there was anything untrue to what they were saying. They said, wow, we sure got these guys going or anything like that. So I think there's some kind of real event that took place. Was it an alien abduction? Were they taken onto an alien spacecraft? Possibly. The problem is nobody ever escapes with an artifact. You know, the next time you're there, steal a pen, for God's sake. Steal something.
Right, that's one of Neil deGrasse Tyson's famous but methods of getting into the skeptical side of things. But he's got a point, really.
But the other side of the coin is, and I forget who it was, and it may have been V.S. Boas, may have been one of the early abductees had a book that they, or maybe it was the Hill, somebody, maybe it was Betty Hill, I forget who it was, but it was given a book. And they were going to get off the spacecraft or be taken back to where they started, and they took it away from him or her, so they didn't have an opportunity to take the artifact with him or her. So that's part of the problem. The other thing is, if I'm abducting people in some kind of a scientific experiment where we have self-aware beings, unlike, you know, capturing animals, I'm going to bring them into a very austere environment, so that there's not a lot for them to see, there's not a lot for them to remember, and there's nothing for them to take. So you can take it, you can look at it from that point of view. It depends on how the abduction takes place and whether or not the alien creatures are very careful about the subject when he or she is on board the craft. So they may not have the opportunity to steal something. And let's say they did steal something. And it turned out to be made of, oh, I don't know, 90% aluminum and other base metals. And there was really nothing to suggest by the isotopic ratios that it wasn't created on Earth. And it's nothing that's beyond our technology to create. And then what do you do? And that's always been my great fear. We find bits of a real honest-to-God alien spacecraft. I mean, something's happened. We've got debris from it. We've got a piece of it. And we take it in for analysis. And they say, yeah, it's aluminum.
Yeah, but these days, there's no way to really know. Like, maybe back in the early days of the, you know, in the golden era of ufology, back in the late 40s, early 50s, if we got some incredible piece of technology way back then, like a some kind of chip with, you know, 5 billion transistors on it, we might go, okay, this isn't ours. But today, we're actually manipulating things on the atomic level. There's practically nothing we can't make or figure out how to make now, really.
And that's when they say, you know, well, the isotopic ratios are not anything found naturally on Earth. And we say, yeah, but we can make it.
Yeah,
we can manipulate the isotopic ratios.
Exactly. So that's like the Bob White artifact, right? You know about that. Okay, the isotopic ratios aren't like anything found on Earth. Well, that's because it came off of a grinder that was used to make a whole bunch of different products. So the ratios aren't like anything that would be made or belong to any specific product.
And that's kind of one of the things we fight through. If you've got an artifact, unless it demonstrates a technology that's far superior to anything that we have, and I think back to Bill Brazel, who talked about fiber optics in 1947. He said, well, there was this one thing that was like monofilament fishing line, and you shine a light in one end and it comes out the other. Well, he's clearly talking about fiber optics. So if we had a piece of fiber optics, he lost the debris when the military came and collected all that debris from him. But had he been able to save it and document that he picked it up in 1947, 1948, then you've got a nice piece of evidence there, because who was making fiber optics at that time?
Dow Corning, if I recall correctly. But, I mean, back then in the late 40s, I don't think people even would have known what to use it for, because digital technology didn't really come along until years later. I mean, it was sort of there. The idea was there. But to be able to transmit it in light pulses, that took a few decades to come together.
And that's the problem. The other thing I've always said, and this doesn't really work in today's environment, but it worked beautifully, you know, 25 years ago. If you took a VCR, a videotape, that's videotape recorder for the youngsters out there that don't know what it is, a power pack and a TV back to Merlin the Magician, you show him the videotape, which is essentially a black ribbon, and if you know the secrets, you can get color pictures and sound off it. But you have to know two things that are, you have to understand two things that are invisible, electricity and magnetism. And, of course, Merlin the Magician didn't understand that. He would not be able to decode that black ribbon into pictures and sound. We, of course, could do it today because we know what it is. And I've always thought that if we picked up technology at Roswell, that it would be so far advanced that even with applying our technology today, we may not have figured out exactly how it works or exactly what it is. I have suggested, and it's only a suggestion, it's the only thing I can think of, is that our study of composite materials might have been inspired or at least advanced by the components of the object, because we could understand that on a much smaller level. We could understand composite materials. Bill Brazel also talked about a piece of debris, said it was light like balsa wood. Had the density of balsa wood, you know what it's like. But he had a pocket knife, he said, he used to use to cut barbed wire with. And he said he tried to get a shaving off it because he wanted to see if there was stratification in it. And that he was unable to even make a mark on it. But if you looked at that, it may have given a clue about some kind of composite material. I don't know if that's true. That's speculation on my part. But these are the things that worry me, that with what we have today in the way of evidence, much of it can be explained in the mundane, but there are cases where explaining it in the mundane stretches credulity. Leveland, for example, in 1957, you had people at, I believe, at least 13 separate locations reporting independently that their vehicles were stopped, their lights were dim, their radios were filled with static on close approach of this object around Leveland during November 2nd of 1957. They reported it to the sheriff's office, or called the sheriff's office and told about it. There was no media. It was, you couldn't text or post to Facebook or Instagram, my vehicle was just stopped by a flying saucer. And everybody said, oh, yeah, okay, let's go. You had to wait for the news media to kind of disseminate the information.
Or be lucky enough to have like a Polaroid camera or something where you could get it on actual film.
Well, yeah, and, in today's environment, you'd have it on your cell phone and probably HD and wonderful. But the point simply is, you know, here was a case where, had it been investigated properly in 1957, Don Kehoe at NICAP and the Air Force were arguing over the number of witnesses, for crying out loud, as opposed to, let's gather the testimony, let's see what people said, let's talk about this interaction with the environment where they created some kind of a field that suppressed the car engine. The Condon Committee looked at this case briefly. I think there's one mention it in their big fancy report on the scientific investigation of UFOs. They said they knew of no mechanism where a magnetic field could stop a car engine, and when you remove that magnetic field, the car would start spontaneously. And that got me to thinking about this, and I looked at a lot of the testimony. They don't really say the car started spontaneously.
Exactly.
They say the car started. The driver took some action.
Yes.
He or she started the car. There are some where they do say it started spontaneously, but in most cases, the way things are worded, it doesn't tell you that they started spontaneously. It tells you that the car engine operated properly once the magnetic field was moved.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I found the same thing going back and really looking closer at the evidence. And it seems to me that this sort of the automatically starting by itself scenario is something that is Hollywoodized, and that after the fact, I think people are picking up their experience and embellishing it with that. It was just like in that movie or something along those lines.
Just like Close Encounters. I want to ask some more questions, but also go back to Roswell in another area too, which is the fact that we really didn't discover the case until more than 30 years after it happened. How could the memories of those involved that were interviewed over late 1970s and on have been corrupted by cultural influences and may differ from what really happened? How would we ever possibly know? We've got Kevin D. Randall here. His blog is A Different Perspective. We have a link to it over at the Paracast forums at forum.theparacast.com, where you can discuss this episode and other things about UFOs and other subjects with Gene and J. Randall Murphy. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771.
for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.